From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. It has been a busy week in Georgia politics. A new governor sworn in, new legislative session underway in the House and Senate. Now leaders are rallying support for their agendas. Republican Governor Brian Kemp delivered his first State of the State address yesterday.
Last year, the legislature lowered the state income tax rates and fully funded public school education. I'm confident that we can do it again.
GPB Politics reporter Stephen Fowler is taking a break from the Capitol to join us in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Virginia.
Stephen, the week began with the inauguration of Governor Brian Kemp and other lawmakers. Kemp did sign a trio of executive orders on his first day. What did they involve?
So Monday was a busy day. Kemp had a private prayer service with his family, then was sworn in as Georgia's 83rd governor, and lastly had a review of troops. And after that, he did sign these three executive orders. One creates something called the Georgians First Commission, which is going to spend the next year and a half or so looking at ways to improve small business opportunities and laws and frameworks, cut red tape, basically. One is another thing that Governor Deal had before, which was a state ethics policy for the executive branch, no gifts, things like that. And the last one dealt with sexual harassment. It creates a unified sexual harassment policy for all of the different state branches of government and all of the different departments and things like that. One of the things it does is creates a inspector position, or kind of each department has to have a male and a female who will investigate claims of sexual harassment. And all of it is funneled up to the State Office of Inspector General, who will have to oversee all sorts of cases of sexual harassment, as opposed to each department kind of handling it internally.
And as I understand it, the state Senate made its own changes regarding sexual harassment. What happened there?
So also on Monday, when the state Senate first gaveled in, they passed some rules changes, kind of internal rules of how they operate, different things like that. And they went the opposite direction with sexual harassment. They put a time limit and a window in which somebody can accuse a senator or a staffer in the Senate of sexual harassment. Previously, it was indefinitely. Now it's 2 years. And there were some other things, like if you file a complaint, you cannot make it public. Otherwise, that complaint gets dismissed and you could be fined.
So a record number of female lawmakers are in the state legislature and U.S. Congress right now. 2018, of course, called the Year of the Woman. But female senators in Georgia say they don't have equal access to power. Here is Republican State Senator Renee Unterman speaking on Monday.
Ladies of the Senate, we are not the pitcher. We're not the first baseman. We're not the second baseman. We're not the third baseman. I played shortstop. We're not the shortstop people. We're not even in the outfield. As a matter of fact, we're not even in the ballpark. We're outside, and we're outside looking over a fence, and we're climbing that fence, and we're trying to look into the ball field to see who's playing.
Senator Unterman, she is a former nurse, by the way, was ousted as head of the Senate Health and Human Services Committee. Now, who makes decisions on who serves on or heads committees?
Well, so there's a Senate Committee on Assignments, which is one of the committees in the Senate. And it's right now it's male lawmakers that decided who gets to be the chair, the vice chair, the secretary, and on each of these committees. And there are 27 committees in the Senate. Four of them right now are headed by women, which is up from two during the last legislative session. But now one thing that Unterman said, and several of her Democratic colleagues came to say, is that even though four women headed up those Senate committees, most of those committees didn't have any real actual power. Senator Unterman, when she was chair of the Health and Human Services Committee, said that she saw 121 bills during that committee in the last session, and she was moved to chair the Science and Technology Committee, which only saw three. So there's a big disparate proportional amount of what the committees see. And Senator Elena Parent, a Democrat from Atlanta, came on and said that most eight of the nine committees that she saw that passed the most bills were chaired by men and had overrepresentation of men and underrepresentation of women.
So besides tightening up on how sexual harassment claims can be filed within the Senate, sounds like there are some complaints within the female leadership, and it's been building since the beginning of the week. Unterman is not the only one who's angry. Who is standing beside her on this?
Well, so what you had on the Senate floor earlier this week was you had Senator Unterman come up and speak. Senator Parent, Senator Freddie Powell Sims. You had a series of female senators from old hands to newly elected senators come in and share their stories and share their perspective about the expertise they had, and maybe it wasn't used on this commission. Senator Jen Jordan, who we heard at the top of the show, said, if you're going to put me in charge of a committee, she was put in charge of a committee and said she was proud until she found out that committee only saw six bills and said, if you're going to stick me somewhere and not use my skill set, shame on you. So it was a bipartisan issue. It was a, you know, a female issue. And other male senators did come up and say this isn't right as well. So it's a sticking point in the Senate.
And those who defended, is this along party line?
Well, Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan released a statement saying that it's a difficult process deciding who goes on these committees, consensus builders, people who have expertise, et cetera, and things like that. And any notion that there was any sort of bias or anything in there was nonsense. And another Republican Senator, Jeff Mullis, came up and said basically that Democrats did similar things when they were in power and people should stop whining about committee assignments.
How about over in the State House? Are we seeing the wave of women shaking things up there?
Well, the State House does not have new leadership. Republican House Speaker David Ralston has been there a while. He runs a tight ship. People respect his leadership style. And there are a lot more people and a lot more committees, and it's a lot more representative of the makeup of Georgia than the smaller state Senate.
Speaking with GPB politics reporter Stephen Fowler, he's been down at the state capitol most days following all things political and bringing them back to us at GPB. Yesterday, Governor Brian Kemp did deliver his first State of the State address 4 days in. What did he have to say?
Well, Brian Kemp got his start as a builder working in constructions and things. So all of his speeches this week have had a theme about building. Yesterday, he opened up with a parable of two builders from the Bible. There was one builder who built a house upon a rock and another built it on sand. When the rain came, the one with the sand washed away. He says Georgia is built on a rock. And there are a lot of things going right with the economy and with unemployment being low and things like that. But he said there are certain areas that need to improve, like small businesses that he mentioned, rural health care, rural Georgia, and our education system. And he wants to make sure that all of those are fixed and that more people want to continue to come to Georgia.
So in that bill, he proposed his budget. How does that deviate from the last spending plan under former Governor Deal?
Well, one of the things that former Governor Deal did in his final year was fully fund the state's education formula. That's something that Governor Kemp says he wants to continue. But there's some other educational proposals that Kemp made on the campaign trail that now he's put into this proposed budget. The biggest is a $3,000 raise for teachers and also a 2% raise for state employees and other school people like bus drivers and nurses and things like that. That's a huge chunk of change. In the budget, that item is about $491 million is what it would cost to do that raise for teachers. Now, on the campaign trail, he promised $5,000, but he said it's a good down payment on that process in this next year. So the education's the big thing. School safety is another thing. There's money in there for a one-time grant for every school in Georgia to have $30,000 to upgrade security as they see fit. And he said school safety and security and education is also tied into mental health. So there's positions for mental health counselors at public high schools in Georgia.
How are budget writers responding to this?
Well, the Georgia Budget and Policy Institute, which is a nonpartisan group looking at the budget, has a lot of thoughts about how things will be paid for or not paid for or what's in there. Education groups are very pleased with this focus on education. You know, there are a lot of people eager to see how that $491 million is going to magically appear to pay for these things. But since the budget came out 4 days into Governor Kemp's tenure and there's budget hearings all next week, there's going to be a lot of people diving in deep, myself included, to figure out what's different, what's the same, and who's going to pay for it.
What's the response been from Democrats so far?
Well, the Democrats did hold a response to the state of the state last night. Senator Harold Jones of Augusta applauded Kemp for things like education, but said there needs to be a step further. So they have proposals like a $15 minimum wage and a student loan payment program, saying that there needs to be need-based financial aid programs in Georgia. And one of the things that Governor Kemp proposed was $500,000 for this anti-gang task force. Now, in the state of the state response from the Democrats, they said, this is good, we need to target this, but be careful in how you frame it and phrase it so it's not predatory and so it's not negative to like the African-American community and other groups, and that it really does focus on the criminal justice reform aspect of the gang issue.
Now we're down to just 36 days for lawmakers. First four just pretty much flew by. Not heard much about actual legislation. What are leaders going to do to prioritize getting things done?
Well, both leaders of the House and Senate spoke earlier this week at the Georgia Chamber's Eggs and Issues Breakfast and kind of outlined their plans, some of the big things. Rural Georgia, we've got proposals for expanding broadband access, expanding rural health care. We have the school safety issues and the school teacher pay issues. And one of the things that is kind of mentioned around there is $150 million for new voting machines and a new voting system. That's something that's going to take a lot of time for lawmakers to figure out what exactly they want to do, how they want to change election law. And that's going to take a lot of time and a lot of political capital to get it done, because it's not like signing a bill saying, okay, we're going to give this money here. You've got to completely rewrite the way election code works. So that's something to watch for.
Well, I know you will be keeping a close eye on that. GBB Politics reporter Stephen Fowler.
Thank you.
It was the laws of nature that guided beloved poet Mary Oliver. The Pulitzer Prize winner died yesterday at the age of 83. Her accessible poetry celebrated small, sacred moments, often discovered on walks in the woods near her home on Cape Cod and later in Florida. Here's On Second Thought producer Elena Rivera reading Oliver's poem, In Blackwater Woods.
Look, the trees are turning their own bodies into pillars of light, are giving off the rich fragrance of cinnamon and fulfillment. The long tapers of cattails are bursting and floating away over the blue shoulders of the ponds. And every pond, no matter what its name is nameless now. Every year, everything I have ever learned in my lifetime leads back to this. The fires and the black river of loss, whose other side is salvation, whose meaning none of us will ever know. To live in this world, you must be able to do three things. To love what is mortal, to hold it against your bones, knowing your own life depends on it, and when the time comes to let it go, to let it go.
That's On Second Thought producer Elena Rivera reading Mary Oliver's poem, In Blackwater Woods. Oliver died yesterday at the age of 83 from lymphoma. She'd written some poems about Georgia. Unfortunately, too long for us to read today, but just a little glimpse there of her life and poetry. She's a woman who said she was living her life as a bride wedded to wonder. Coming up, a new documentary alleging sexual exploitation of young women by R. Kelly has stirred up a mix of responses and album sales. The FBI says related cases in Atlanta are all too common. We're going to hear from somebody who works in the area with women who have been through this, dealing with the responses to trauma and their lasting effects. I'm Virginia Prescott. You can learn more when On Second Thought continues after a short break.